Hi, everyone.
We're back.
If you're wondering why there is a true crime episode in the Quit Your Jobs This podcast feed, it's because I am exploring venturing into the true crime podcasting, my true crime podcasting era.
Consider this our pilot episode.
No, literally. Like, Katie and I have been wanting to start a true crime podcast for literal years.
Easily.
And when I watched this documentary, I immediately had to talk about it forever. And so I thought, this is our perfect opportunity to potentially start a true crime podcast. Basically, we're recording this episode and probably three episodes to cover this full documentary series to essentially just see if we have anything here. Like, could we actually start a podcast recapping true crime documentaries? Is that our thing? I don't know. We don't know.
It's an exploration.
So we're here trying it out. And if you're a true crime girly, I hope that you listen, and I would love to hear your feedback on whether you think Katie and I should keep this going and start a whole true crime podcast. But before we put in the effort of creating that, we're just testing it out on my Quit Your Job Sis feed, because this is where I already have a podcast and people who like listening to podcasts, and hopefully you like listening to true crime podcasts.
If you don't, sorry about it.
If you don't, you can probably skip this one. But if you do, we are going to be talking about the new Netflix documentary, American Nightmare. And somehow, neither of us had heard about this case before we watched this.
Yeah, I was actually, like, on the edge of my seat the entire time, which...
Like, yeah, I don't know how I hadn't heard of this case, but I literally did not know what the outcome was going to be. So it was quite the emotional journey for me.
Usually I Google the end of things because I need to know, like, if my favorite characters die. And I did not do that with this because you had texted me.
Yeah.
You were like, let's do a podcast about this because it's so freaking wild. You guys, this is so...
Oh, it's bananas. I mean, if you haven't watched it, you should definitely watch it.
Yeah, first. Probably watch it first and then come back to this episode, because you're going to think we are making this shit up. You're going to think that we made up the people making this up. It's so absolutely batshit crazy, you guys.
Yeah. No, it's a wild one. And I just had so many thoughts that I just found myself really needing to talk to you about it. And I was like, maybe this is the start of our true crime podcast. Who knows? Who knows? But here's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be, like, kind of recapping the documentary and what's happening, and then just sharing our thoughts on the situation, on the people who are involved, on the actual, like, documentary itself. So, yeah. Hope you enjoy. Let's get into it.
Buckle up, kids.
Alrighty. So this documentary opens. We open on this cute video of a couple at the beach. And I was just like, oh, God. What is about to happen?
You know what's so funny is I completely disregarded that. I was just like, oh, this is nice, but I didn't write anything about it. I was like, my first immediate reaction is like, the 911 call. That's where the story starts.
No,
but like,
for sure.
No, this is a really cute, adorable, all-American couple. Denise Huskin and Aaron Quinn.
Yes.
From, where are they? Vallejo, California. They live in this perfect little suburban neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me the ick thinking about the fact that they live in such a perfect place.
Yeah,
and
I didn't even really think about that, but let's not. it's fine. So yeah, after this cute video of them being happy at the beach, we immediately cut to a 911 call. It is March 23rd, 2015, 1:53 p.m. in Vallejo, California. And we hear a man who very calmly states that his girlfriend has been kidnapped.
Okay, why does emergency say, what do you mean, kidnapped? I understand that they need him to elaborate, but for as calm as Aaron is on this 911 call, the operator is also trained to be calm, I get it, but what do you mean, kidnapped?
Yeah.
Like, she immediately doesn't believe him. Is, what? Like, is kidnapped not an obvious statement?
If I
call 911 and I'm like, Lindsay's been kidnapped, they're like, okay, what do you mean, kidnapped?
I do understand.
She's been taken from my home?
I understand that being probably a jar, like,
it's probably a standard question.
Normally,
probably immediately need more details, right?
I feel like normally they're probably used to hearing, like, oh, my girlfriend's missing. But, like, to say my girlfriend has been kidnapped, I feel like is a weird statement, because it's like, so you know that she's been taken? Like, do you know who took, like, what?
But that's what I'm saying, is, like, the phrase kidnapped is a distinctly different, like, here's what happened, I just witnessed crimes. versus like, I can't find my girlfriend. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't really get hung up on that, I guess.
I got mad.
My reaction was also, what do you mean kidnapped?
But like from the jump, I think this 911 call is sketchy because again, like they're trained to be calm and collected and get all the details. But now that I know what happened, I'm biased because
yeah, I know
the whole thing, like he's too calm, but we also find out he's been drugged and he's coming out of like a comatose. So
that's true.
Not to skip ahead completely, but.
But we don't know that yet. So my immediate reaction was like, I don't like how calm this man is. Because not only did he just calmly state my girlfriend has been kidnapped, he said my girlfriend was kidnapped last night. And it is currently 1:53 p.m.
That's true. Because then the 911 operator is like, it took you this long to make this phone call, basically. Is like, why did it take you so long? And
yeah.
Immediately the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. I was like, this guy's a serial killer.
And that's when he says he was tied up and he was given sedatives. But immediately I'm suspicious of this man.
Yeah.
Because well, I'm like, okay. First of all, why are you so calm? Second of all, why are you calling at 2 p.m. about your girlfriend who got kidnapped last night? Like, what is happening?
Let's talk about the fact that he also says to the police, because now the police have come, right? It's 3:04 p.m. 2 hours or an hour has gone by. The police are there. You see the body cams. Aaron is telling the police that this man, this person, these people that have come into his room, address them by name. Like his account continuously says that he and Denise are addressed by name, or he is addressed by name. It's like, Aaron, lay on your stomach, or like whatever the hell he says. Like,
yeah. Like, whoever did this,
how does this
knew them.
Perpetrator know their names?
Yeah. So let's get into the full story.
I have so many questions anyway.
Let's get into the full story. Aaron is at the police station to be questioned about what happened. Enter Detective Matt Mustard.
Matt fucking Mustard.
Listen, like, are we for real? Is that actually his name? Because the literal clue of it all, like, are we we're like straight out of a game of Clue, like Detective Mustard,
Colonel Mustard in the library.
Like, there's no way.
You couldn't be fucking kidding me.
This man is real. And I'm not here to make fun of someone's name, but spoiler alert, I despise this man, so I'm going to. His name is stupid. His name is Detective Mustard and I hate him.
I got a lot of thoughts about Matt Mustard, but I'll keep them to myself for now.
Yeah. So enter Detective Matt Mustard, who is here to question Aaron. And as we begin this questioning, it slow pans onto a shot of Aaron here with us, like talking to camera. He's a talking
boy. Oh, you're right.
And I'm like, oh my God, because I was not expecting that so early. Like,
yeah. And he's in regular clothes too. So immediately right. I'm expecting him to
like,
be.
He's clearly not
in
incarcerated right now.
Yep.
So I'm like, what is happening? Is this man guilty or not? But. Then he proceeds to tell the most unbelievable story that I have ever heard in my 29 years of being a true crime girly.
Probably in like the 40 fucking years that Matt Mustard has ever been a detective, it was the most unbelievable story he's ever heard too. Like, it is so preposterous to me.
Yeah.
And I have so many questions written down about it.
Okay. So the story he tells is that he's woken up in the middle of the night to a blinding white light and lasers and someone with a taser. He said a taser went off. Did someone get tased?
Clicking
no idea
too. Yeah, that's.
And the man says Aaron, calling him by name, lie face down, and then makes his girlfriend Denise tie his hands behind his back with a zip tie. The man puts swim goggles over Aaron's face
that are blacked out
as a blindfold. They put headphones on him.
And then the voice in the headphones tells them that they're going to, his perpetrators, are going to take their vitals.
Yeah.
And they put a blood pressure cuff on the guy.
Blood pressure.
Okay, sick.
And then they give him a sedative.
We never go back to the blood pressure cuff thing ever, like, I think at all. I can't remember because I haven't rewatched the other two episodes. It's not the point here, but like, I'm gesturing at the fucking podcast mic because I don't under fucking stand.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever.
Are we just checking their vitals to make sure that he can drug them? Because then he proceeds to feed them NyQuil and diazepam.
Does he? Yeah, I don't know. So they give him a sedative. Also, another small detail, these people, do we know how many people there are?
At this point, there are multiple.
But we don't know specifically how many. I don't think they
No, because he, okay, clear. Here's the thing. And I wrote this down. Aaron is shivering. He's cold, either from the sedative or because he's freaking out because he's tied up on the bed and just like laying on the floor or something. I don't even know. And he asks for a blanket. And one of the voices goes, "Oh, sorry. We're all wearing wetsuits."
Yeah, yeah. They're wearing wetsuits.
We're all wearing wetsuits.
Okay. So these men, some number of men.
Plural men.
That is not identified. Who are wearing wetsuits. They came in, they put goggles on him, they took his vitals, and they gave him a sedative. And then this is like literally the most ridiculous story. And then they take Denise into a different room and they put Aaron on the couch. And then he hears one of the men say, "We have a problem. This was intended for Andrea."
All right. I'm going to ask this specific question a lot in the next however long this episode is. What the fuck about Andrea?
Oh, yeah.
Carry on.
Anyway, we learn that Andrea is Aaron's ex-fiance who was living at that house. I'm presuming that this is Aaron's house and
yes, Denise
is just living there. So I guess his ex, Andrea, had been living with him 6 months prior, back in September, and they were engaged, and now they are broken up, obviously. So they said, "This is intended for Andrea, but we'll take Denise anyway because Aaron could pay them enough to make it worth their while. And they want $15,000 to get Denise back." They then also install a camera in the living room where they put Aaron, and they tell him that if he leaves the room, they will know and they will hurt Denise. So he can't escape. If he calls 911, they'll hurt her.
Right.
And they are watching him. And then they get
stuck on the couch.
And then they get in his car.
His being Aaron's car, by the way.
Yeah, they get in Aaron's car and take Denise and they leave. And then Aaron passes out and then eventually.
Okay, but that immediately brings up another question that I have, because this man, these men, these plural men in his house, right? How did he get there? I mean, obviously, I think this is answered later on, I think. How did this man get in this neighborhood without a vehicle? And then he simply just takes Aaron's and is like, "Sayonara." What?
He doesn't even have
a car. Like, he's
how did they get there?
So presuming that they are just trolling the neighborhood, right? They're on foot. So they're just walking around like sketchballs.
These men in wetsuits.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, I'm assuming that they're not in, like, flippers and scuba gear. They're just in wetsuits. So, like, it's a little less weird. But, like, could you imagine? Down the nape. No, that was just, what?
That did not even occur to me, actually. How did they get there if they didn't have their own car?
We find out later. I think it's in episode 2 or 3.
Maybe you do.
But I don't want to give all that away yet.
The thing about this is, like, at this point, to be honest, I didn't believe him at all. Because I was like, this is the most absurd story I've ever heard. But then thinking about it, I'm like, it's almost so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous that it's like, if you're lying, why would you make up the most unbelievable story? Like, if you're lying, you want it to be simple. You want people to believe you.
Right.
If you're lying, you're just going to say, some guy broke into my house and tied me up and took my girlfriend.
Right.
Like, why would you add all of these details that are so fucking bananas that literally no one on earth would believe this story?
I have a lot of thoughts about that, too. But there's so much of this story that could then be corroborated that I think is not, that we'll get into.
Yeah.
But before, it's like Aaron's waking up, right? We're going back to that for a moment. Aaron's waking up on the couch. He realizes that Denise is gone. This is like right around the time he's going to call 911. It pans to her family.
Yes.
And I realize, and they say this in the episode, that Denise's family has never met Aaron.
Yeah.
So like initially I'm watching this and I'm like, holy shit, this guy did it. Like, this guy is a murderer. I mean, they've been dating for what? About 6 months-ish?
Yeah.
So, like, there's no reason that the family would have met yet. Like, it's not like they've been together for years.
Yeah, it's a newish relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I, at this point, fully think he did it because it's always the boyfriend.
Yeah.
And his story is absurd. And he waited till 2 p.m. to call. I'm like, he did it. Like, he murdered her. She's not coming back.
I have a thought about the scuba suits, though. I'm all over the place. But to go back to your... No. So... To go back to your, this is so, like, unbelievable that it's believable. I remember listening to, I think it was like a Dateline podcast episode, where this man, he was from Connecticut. I think you can Google it. I think his name is Matthew Yusman. He was a banker, and he gets taken from his home, but he lives with his elderly mother, and him and the mother are tied up and kidnapped, and they're made, like, not kidnapped, because they're never taken from their home, but he's made to, like, shower all the evidence off of him, and they vacuum the fucking house. Like, the kidnappers, these perpetrators, because ultimately what they do is they take Matt, this banker guy, and they're going to make him, they strap a bomb to him, and they're going to make him blow up the bank if he can't get, like, a fuck ton of money, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he's telling the cops this, and he's like, yeah, they vacuumed my fucking house, like, they made me shower, there's no evidence, like, it was, they were very respectful to his elderly mother. It was preposterous, and I remember thinking, like, who fucking does that? Like, these criminals had, like, respectful mindsets where they were like, yeah. Oh, sorry, ma'am, we're just gonna lay you on the bed and let you rest, and your son will be back soon, maybe. That's preposterous, and it was real, it happened. Yeah. Like, the guy had a bomb strapped to his chest, it was a Dateline episode, like, this happened in Connecticut, like...
Oh my god.
So the wetsuits, the scuba suit thing, like, I didn't immediately not believe him, but, like, for all of me that was like, this guy's a murderer, it was like, holy shit, this weird shit happens, like, this weird shit really does fucking happen.
Yeah.
Who vacuums the fucking house of the person they're trying to kidnap? Like, who has time for that? You're trying to get mud? Like, whatever, okay. Loser.
So yeah, then we're with Denise's family. Did you think that her brother looked uncomfortably similar to Aaron, or was that just me?
Oh, weird thought. I didn't notice that, but now that you point it out, I'm kind of like, eh.
It actually wasn't just me. When I watched this the first time, I watched it with Brendan.
And he pointed it out?
And he was like, wait, is that the guy who, isn't that her boyfriend? I was like, is her brother, but... I was literally thinking the same thing. They look very similar. Yeah. I mean, when I watched it again, I was like, no, they don't.
But upon initial...
They look similar enough that it made me uncomfortable a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, not important. We separately... So it's her mom and her brother, and then we separately cut to her dad, Mike, to which I was like, hashtag child of divorce, I am with you. Clearly they are not together anymore.
Yeah, that one hurt.
Yeah.
Not the divorce part, but just like the dad being so broken up about his daughter. Like, that one hurt.
I can't eat dad. Okay. We'll get into Mike.
Should we?
And yeah. Her brother Devin is immediately suspicious of Aaron, to which I was like, same. I'm with you on
that. Because we just realized that they've never met. Like,
yeah.
My family would immediately be suspicious of Kelvin, too, like, if they had never met.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Next, we meet Henry Lee, who is a crime reporter, and he's talking about how unusual this is for Vallejo. And I'm like, yeah, this is unusual for literally anywhere on Earth.
but that's what gave me the ick about suburbia, like, because then he goes and he interviews this.
It's always suburbia, though.
I know.
Every true crime documentary starts with, it was a small town where no one locked their doors. First of all, lock your doors.
Lock your fucking doors.
There should no longer be any small towns where no one locks their doors. Why do you not lock your doors?
Lock your doors.
Give me one good reason why it shouldn't be locked. It takes zero effort.
I don't like it.
Well, like, why are you just letting anyone in your house? I don't understand people who don't lock their doors. I don't care where you live. Lock your doors.
I don't like it.
But he also talks about how the media will be all over this case because it's a pretty blonde, all-American girl who has been kidnapped. So, yeah, I mean, true, but also that shouldn't matter, but okay.
But it does. That's the problem. It does.
It does. It does.
That in and of itself is another podcast episode. we don't have to touch on that yet.
And he also talks about how the suspicion is falling on the boyfriend, obviously. Just PSA to all the men.
I wrote that in my notes.
You are by default the prime suspect if your girlfriend or fiance or wife goes missing. Like, it doesn't matter the circumstances. It doesn't matter how innocent you are. You are the prime suspect immediately.
Mm.
So, like, I talk about this with Brendan often. I'm like, if I ever go missing, you should probably get a lawyer.
Oh,
even if you didn't do it.
Let me go back to what my initial reaction to this show was. We watched it, and I immediately turned to Kelvin, and I was like, if I ever go missing and you are not involved, immediately get yourself a lawyer. And he was like, I have no idea how to do that. I'm like, I don't care. You literally have to say the phrase, I want a lawyer. Those are the four words you need to know. I want a lawyer.
Yeah.
That's it. You say nothing else to the police. I don't care if you didn't do it. You want a lawyer.
Yeah. And I mean, I get it. It's tough because it's like, on one hand, you need to talk to the police so they can find me.
Yeah, but if you get a lawyer, then you can say all the things to the lawyer, and then the lawyer can be like, yes, go ahead, say this.
Yes,
like,
yes.
They can protect you.
Yeah.
I hope.
But like, it's...
Hot button issue.
It always amazes me in these documentaries when like the husband is offended because he's under suspicion. I'm like, obviously you're under suspicion.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yes. Yeah. Why are you surprised by this? Have you never watched Dateline in your life? Like, you are the number one suspect always.
It is always the boyfriend. Like, even if it's not, it's always the partner, right? Like, if Kelvin goes missing, I'm immediately the first.
Yeah.
Like, you live together. They're like, you, I can't. You're always the first. That's it.
Kelvin.
Sorry about it.
Kelvin is statistically the person most likely to murder you.
That's
How do you feel
neat.
About that?
That's neat.
But yeah, also just a general,
that's a neat fact,
just a general blanket statement. Don't talk to the cops, even in any situation, really. If you're asked to talk to the cops, just don't, because unless you're under arrest,
you have rights. You don't have to talk.
If you're not under arrest,
you have rights. You don't have to talk.
You don't have to talk to them. And if you are under arrest, you should not be talking to them. You should say, I want a lawyer. So really, in any situation, there's no reason for you to be talking to the cops. And like, nothing good can come of it. Only bad things can come of it. Your words can only be misconstrued. They can only make something you said incriminating. Like, don't do it. Don't do it. As we will learn.
Can we talk about Lieutenant Kenny motherfucking Park, please?
Yes. What would you like to say about
it? He's the spokesperson for the Vallejo police, yes, for context. And I don't know if... Like, I struggle internally with this because I don't know if he's just told what to say and or he's, like, the guy that's, like, coming up with this shit. But, like, man, oh, man, does he do Aaron and Denise dirty?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We will get to that.
I know, but, like, he introduces this case to the media. Mm-hmm. So I wrote it down, like, just as is. Lieutenant Kenny motherfucking Park. That's it. That's all I wrote. Because, like, he introduces this case and he... Well, I forget what he even says. But it's, like, they don't... Because then my next note is they're just all confused. Like, the police, yes, is, he's talking about how everybody is just fucking confused, right? This is just so out of pocket. But Aaron says he's on drugs, or he was drugged. And they're just like, they don't, like, they can't corroborate that. They can't, yeah, like, test him for, think, to have diazepam and NyQuil in his system. Like, does that shit just go away? No, I presume
not. Imagine not in less than 24 hours.
Right.
But yeah, so we cut back to the interrogation room with Aaron and Detective Mustard. And Aaron continues to tell us the rest of the story. So he wakes up at 11:30 in the morning and he's still like groggy from the sedatives. He sees the camera pointed at him. He can't call 911 because he knows they're watching him. And then he gets an email from the kidnappers saying that...
It's so silly to me.
They want $15,000 in ransom. But yeah, I was like, email, like, what?
Email's a bold choice. Cause like, then my question is, why aren't the police immediately tracing that IP address? Like, where did that email come from?
And how do you know this man's going to be checking his email? Like, why not a text? If you know who he is and they clearly have his contact information, why not just text him? Like, maybe because it's more easily traceable, but
what?
Like.
But what ransom call do you, have you ever heard of, like, seen on TV, heard about in the news that's like, not on the phone, doing one of those, right, spooky voices that's like, we have your daughter,
you would
kind
think
of thing.
This, like, email is somehow traceable. So, like, but, I don't know. But anyway, he calls his bank and learns that he can only advance $3,500, mm-hmm, I guess, from his credit card. I guess he doesn't have any cash.
I have no
idea. I don't really know the situation. But he tells them he can only get $3,500. And then... time ticks on and he doesn't hear anything back from them. So he eventually makes the decision to call 911, even though he knows it's risky and they could hurt Denise. He doesn't really know what else to do. And that's, you know, when the 911 call happens. Also, we quickly cut to Aaron's parents, Marianne and Joe, oh, yeah, Quinn, who are, by all accounts, still together because they are together when they're talking. And his mom is just talking about how he was such a good kid, never really got in trouble, and how he was a heartbreaker.
I feel like that's such a mom thing to say.
I thought that was a weird comment. But yeah, I guess it's just a mom thing.
Well, yeah, in the context of, like,
the entirety of these episodes, I think it is just a mom thing. But yeah, I could see why you would think it would, like...
It gave me the ick. Yeah. Why do moms act so weird about their sons? That's... Not that I think she was acting that way, but, like, just moms and their sons, it's a weird thing sometimes. It gives me the ick.
When Aaron is talking to Matt Mustard about the camera, he points up to the interview camera and is like, it's in my living room, just like that. And Matt Mustard goes, I haven't seen it yet. Matt, you probably should have fucking seen it. Like, there should be some evidence photos. You should be reviewing that shit. I mean, I get that you're probably in the interview with Aaron this entire time. But at what point do you not see that, like, oh, yeah, we validated that there's a camera there? Matt Mustard full, like, comes for Aaron's neck. Goes right for the jugular and doesn't believe him immediately. Does not validate the fact that there's a camera.
I feel like we're missing a lot of the information about, like, what the police actually did with all the evidence and, like,
I have a literal list here of, like things.
We don't really ever hear about them.
We don't hear about any of the evidence. Like, we don't hear about, like, yeah. So this whole, this three-part series is, like, really paints the police in a really bad picture until, like, the third episode. But
what
we don't
mean until the third episode. It gets worse in the third episode.
I know, but then, like, oh, what's her name to the rescue,
mean, like, the
right?
Other,
like,
police. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but
she does.
The Vallejo.
Like, I know,
Vallejo,
but my
PD
point is, like, they don't talk about any of the things that Vallejo PD actually did.
Right. We're definitely
which leads
not,
me to believe that they did not do.
Yeah. I don't. I'm sure there's just stuff that's missing, but also they definitely fucked up. Like, they definitely.
Yes, there
did
was
not do
definitely a lot of things that,
But yeah, cut back to our interrogation with Matt Mustard. He's asking Aaron about what happened earlier in the night before they went to bed. And he says that Denise came over around 6. She brought over some pizza. We had a few drinks. And then Detective Mustard asks him what was the topic of their conversation. And Aaron reveals, God, that him and Denise were having, quote, issues related to his ex-fiance, Andrea.
And I say again, what the fuck about Andrea?
Here's the thing. If your girlfriend goes missing and you didn't do it, don't tell the cops that you guys were having issues. Don't tell them that you were having an argument the night before, probably. Because
he has all the faith in the world that the police will help him, though.
I know.
He has no reason to think that this is bad information.
Mediocre white boy syndrome, where they think that the cops are always going to be on their side. Guess what? Newsflash, they're not.
Hard lesson to learn for everybody in the room, but, like, don't tell the police things until you talk to a lawyer again.
Yeah, but it's just, like, that's where I was like, oh, God. I mean, at that point, I also was in the camp of he did it, so I was like, oh, there's the motive.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is why if you're innocent, don't say that. Because it's gonna make you look like you have a motive to disappear your girlfriend.
This is also when we find out, because they bring in Andrea for an interview, right? So this
they
is when we find
Andrea.
Out that the reason that they broke up is because Andrea cheated on him. She's a big fat cheater.
Yes. And we learn they broke up.
It's been sad, says Andrea. Bitch, has it?
She said
I went right for her jugular. Like, are you joking me? Don't rile me up. You cheated on this man. It's been sad. Aaron still comes into my office and wants to hug and tries to kiss me on the cheek. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if that's entirely true. Maybe it is. Part of me feels like Andrea's just trying to stoke
feel like
the fire
he said that,
bit.
Though.
Like,
he said...
was having... Yes, I know. He admitted to, like, not having let go of Andrea, but I also feel like...
But I also was, like, confused by that because I'm like, she cheated on you and you're the one who wants to still get back together like
hey,
that?
Man, been there, done that.
Math is not mathing to me.
But also,
okay.
In the middle of that, real quick, this, like, he and Andrea broke up 6 months ago-ish, right? And now he's dating Denise. Like, this is a fresh-ass relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Probably got some shit to work out. But this is also when we find out that Matt, like, says he's going to go to therapy, right? Like, he's just told Andrea,
Aaron.
Or no, sorry, excuse me, Aaron has just told Denise, like, they're having these quote-unquote issues, right? And he says, like, mm-hmm. No, I'm going to get therapy, like, I love you, I care about you,
right?
This is the thing. Like, all right, we stand a man who will get therapy. I also still think you did it right now, so, like, was that a crock of shit? But...
Yeah. But we, yeah, we learn that, first of all, they all work together. They work in the same hospital unit. So I was just like, yikes.
Again, I said, what the fuck about Andrea?
Also, round three.
Bro, maybe stop dating your coworkers. That's...
Yeah, poor choice.
But
then I have Aaron, you idiot, read the emotional cheating. The yes. text about wanting to work things out with Andrea. Like, dude, you're not over her.
No.
Why are you in a relationship with the niece? Respectfully, like, what the fuck are you doing? That's another podcast for another day. But, like, dude.
So, essentially, the night that Denise got kidnapped, they were arguing, I'm assuming. He doesn't necessarily say they were arguing, but she had found text messages between Aaron and Andrea of him basically saying he wanted
to get back together.
Get back like, together.
To work things out, yeah.
With Andrea, and that's like the issues that they were having. And then he said he's gonna go to therapy and figure his shit out, which is like, okay, but why are you texting your ex while you're in an entirely new relationship saying you want to work things out? Because that is suspicious. So I'm not loving this man at this point.
Mm-mm. All of it's kind of icky.
Yeah, like this is a point where I'm fully like, he did it.
This is his motive.
She's not coming back. First of all, anytime a woman goes missing, the chances of her coming back alive are just very not great.
Mm.
So I'm just like, this is not looking good. Yeah. and then Detective Mustard says the thing that is the first of many red flags. And he's talking about how Aaron's story is so far-fetched and so elaborate that it is unbelievable. And I'm like, yes, I'm with you on that. And then he says he's here to find the truth. And I'm like, yes, with you.
Are you, Matt? Are you?
But then he says...
Because they're immediately searching the waters. Like, right before this clip of Matt giving it to Aaron, he's basically, like, there's a clip of the divers searching the rivers and the waters near their home. Because they've immediately just gone, she's gone, she's dead, she's out. Like, she's no longer alive.
Which they should be doing.
Yeah, but also, like, they're searching the waters, but what are they doing to validate Aaron's story? At all.
Right, seemingly nothing. Because as Detective Mustard then says,
I've put a lot of puzzles together. Obviously not this one, bitch.
Yeah, I've put a lot of puzzles together. How do I make the pieces fit so that you look like a monster? And at that point, I'm like, that's not how you do police work. You don't decide what happened and then make the evidence fit what you believe happened. You have to follow the evidence and see where it takes you.
Like, I'll give it to you, Matt. This one was absolutely fucking wild.
Yes.
From the jump, it's so far-fetched. But like, okay, sure, yeah, it's upon first glance, immediately we all think that Aaron did it. Yeah, okay, I'll give it to you. But
yes. You
don't, again, decide what happens and then make the evidence fit your picture. You put the puzzle together and you see the picture at the end.
Yeah.
Dude.
So that's when I realized the cops are not about to do their job because they already have decided that Aaron is lying and they're...
How do I make you look like a monster?
He had me
right then, though. Yeah, because I wrote that down and I was like, man, he had me, bro. I really thought Aaron did it. I was like, yup, for sure.
Right. And like, I get him saying that for the sake of saying it to try to get him to confess. But like, you still got to do your job. You still got to look at the evidence. You still got to corroborate his story. You still have to do the police work. You can't just decide he did something, so I'm not going to do my job now.
He goes on to say to tell Aaron that there's blood in the house. Which,
yeah,
in all likelihood, yeah, because kidnapped humans, tied up, like, drugged, whatever. But did we ever confirm that? Again, I'm here pointing out whether or not the evidence was legit or if it ever happened. Like, we never go back to that. Like, Matt Mustard is unhinged right now.
No.
Like, it's been 6 hours of him interrogating Aaron.
Yeah.
She's not going to rot in 6 hours, bro. He makes a comment. That's what I wrote down, because he makes a comment to Aaron about... He's decided that Aaron has murdered Denise, right? Like, she's dead. It's 2 a.m. Aaron doesn't know what to do with the body. At 2 p.m., he calls 911. So that's, like, what, 12 hours that Aaron can figure this shit out? Like,
yeah.
I recognize that scientifically, bodies immediately start rotting. But, like, in 6 hours, Matt Mustard, Aaron's got a little bit of time. Yeah. Like, if he murdered her, relax.
Yeah. Then we cut to... It's 4:33 a.m. the next day, and Aaron has just taken a lie detector test. Now, I didn't even think of this at the time, but it's 4:30 a.m. The man probably has not slept.
It's been like 18 hours of police.
And
he literally spent 18 hours at the police station.
Yeah.
I'm yelling.
That's insane. The second it said it had like on-screen text, Aaron just took a lie detector test, I was like, oh no. Lie detector tests are never a good idea. Don't ever take one.
Don't take a lie detector test.
They literally can't ever do anything positive for you. So
they're not admissible in court, right?
Yeah, they're not admissible because they're bullshit. They're not reliable. So why would
you
take one?
So, like, even if you take one, it doesn't help you because you can't, like, your lawyers can't use it. So don't take one.
Yeah, no.
It's only hurting you. It's only ever going to hurt you. Because even if it, like, if it comes up bad, you look bad. If it comes up inconclusive, you look bad. If you pass, it's not helping you because you can't take it to court.
Right. And even if, here's the thing, if you're in a situation where the cops are asking you to take a lie detector test, they already think you're hiding something.
Yeah.
So if you pass, that's only going to confirm their belief that you're hiding something. And even, or if you fail, I mean, and if you do pass, they're just going to disregard that information and be like, well, these aren't reliable anyway. We still think you're hiding something. Like, it's not going to clear your name in their mind. So Aaron's just taken a lie detector test, and we see the FBI agent telling him that he has undeniably failed the lie detector test, and basically just starts pushing him to admit what happened. He's like, yeah. like
you're a serial killer. You fucking did it. She's gone.
You're a murderer. You're going to ruin your family's life. Like, all of these things. And at which point, Aaron finally, for the love of God, says he wants a lawyer. And I'm like, that was about 10 hours too late, but here, we made it.
No, I'm sitting there like, get fucked, FBI man. Because he immediately, like, you can see it. Like, his just body language is just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, you have to leave him alone and you have to get him a motherfucking lawyer.
Right.
Finally.
And then Aaron. So the FBI guy leaves because he asked for a lawyer. And then we just continue to watch the camera footage of Aaron having a mental breakdown, which is valid. But I just wrote, white man realizes the police aren't on his side.
No, literally. I go, okay, but bro, like, they always suspect the partner. Like, that was a little bit naive of you. That was literally what I wrote.
It's like, I do, like.
Because then we go,
go ahead. It's just like the absolute, I'm like, any true crime girly could have told you not to take that polygraph, my guy. You know what I mean? Like, we could have avoided this. You could have said, I want a lawyer from the get, and we would have been fine. But here we are. Not that I'm blaming him.
No, but like, you could have said, why are you so shocked? A lot of headache.
That you're, it's like, how can you be sitting in that room telling a detective this insane story? You like, have to know it's always the boyfriend.
But there's no part of him that's like, yeah, this is so preposterous. No one's going to, like, genuinely, there is zero fiber of his being that's like, this is unbelievable. No one's going to believe me. He genuinely goes to the police and is like, they're going to solve this problem. They're going to go find Denise.
Like, Detective Mustard point blank told him, I think you murdered your girlfriend. And he still took the lie. It's like, isn't that the point where you realize, oh, I should get a lawyer?
He's still chilling. He's like, no,
he's like, no, let me take this.
You're a little wrong there, though. Let me help you figure this out.
Let me take this polygraph to clear my name. And
don't do that. Don't,
yeah,
don't you.
Plot twist. It did not clear your name. So again, just a quick recap. Never talk to the police. Literally ever. If you are talking to the police, you should have a lawyer in the room with you. If you ever find yourself in a room with the cops and not a lawyer, you should just kind of take a step back and ask yourself, what the fuck are you doing?
This is also when we
general learn, life rule.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. Retweet. This is also when we learn that I think Aaron has a brother in law enforcement. That's a quick blip on the radar. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even catch that, I don't think.
I'm pretty sure it's Aaron who has the brother in law enforcement. And we just skip right over that. Like, there's no more mention of that. And I, for the life of me, cannot figure that one out, because, like, even if he's, like, if they're in California, and even if he's in, like, Denver, Colorado, or fucking Kansas, like,
right, you would call
there's
your
no
brother.
Shot that, like, you reach out to your brother, who is also in law enforcement. Like, I don't know if, I don't know, because I've never been a victim of a crime, knock on wood, but, like, I don't know if I would immediately go to the police, or if I would immediately go to my police brother.
Right, yeah.
Are they estranged? Like, there's just literally no more mention of this.
I would definitely call my brother.
But also, like, from police to police, like, if the brother is now, like, I have questions and we're never going to touch on this again. It goes right out the window.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know. So,
oh my God.
Then we cut to news footage. This is the point where it says it's been 28 hours since Denise went missing.
Okay.
And this is where we see her dad. He flew to Vallejo. Oh, he lives 400 miles away in Huntington Beach. He flew to Vallejo and he makes his plea to the media, and the dad's making Like, dads in any true crime documentary, the dad of the victim breaks my fucking heart every time.
Yeah, that one hurt.
I'm like devastated because it always makes me think of my dad being in that situation.
Yeah, that's exactly where I went. And it's like, my dad would be a wreck.
I can't, I like physically can't even think about it. It breaks me every single time. So that broke my heart. And then it is 12:24 p.m. on Tuesday, 31 hours missing.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Lee, the crime reporter, gets an email with an audio clip.
What is it about this, these perpetrators and email?
Yeah,
I need to know. To the media, though, not the police.
I was also confused by that. I'm like, why is he sending it to... But it also wasn't clear, did he get it directly from the kidnapper, or did somebody else send that?
No,
like, forward it to him.
It's presumed, I think, that the kidnappers have sent this to Henry.
What?
Like, it
How
just...
do they even know? Anyway.
We get into that a little bit, I think, in the next episode.
Oh, okay. So, he opens the audio clip, and a woman says, "My name is Denise Huskins. I've been kidnapped, but otherwise I'm fine." At which point, I am screaming because what the fuck?
Yeah, but the thing is, she's so, like, the voice is so calm, cool, and collected.
Oh, yeah.
It almost sounds like she's, like, rolling her eyes, like, "My name's Denise. I'm fine. Whatever."
Right. Again, suspiciously calm all around.
Right. Just like, this is what's happening. The sky is blue. I've been kidnapped.
Yeah, but she says, like, personal details.
Yeah, she has to tell them what her favorite concert is or what her first concert is.
And she says something that happened that day so that they know.
Like, right, so the proof of life is really weird, though.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
But essentially, we know she's alive. Like, her family confirms that's her voice.
Yeah, they call the dad, they call the mom, they call the whole family comes into the police station and confirms this. And then we cut to Matt Mustard, again, grilling Aaron, and he goes, "I'm just catching up here." You just called this man a murderer? Eat shit. Your victim is alive. You have, like, the family members have identified her voice.
Yeah.
This is proof of life. She is alive, Matt Mustard.
But he's, like, too busy.
But he, again, seems to just disregard it. Like, "All right, Aaron, you didn't kill her. I was wrong about that." But he never even says that. He's just like, "So she's not dead. You still fucking kidnapped her, dude. Like, what's good with this situation? You're still in on it. Like, you're still a criminal. You are still the problem, my friend."
That's not even the worst part.
No, it's not.
Because we learn from Denise's mom that Detective Mustard is now questioning them.
Yeah, he's attacking Denise's character now.
And asking them questions like, how many boyfriends does she have?
Because that's fucking relevant.
And does she drink very much?
Is she the problem? He's trying to make her the problem.
Like, you would think the police would just be expeditiously following up on this voice message, trying to track down where it came from because their victim is alive and they need to find her. But no, instead, he is interrogating her mom and attacking her character. And then he asks, "Is there anything in her past..." This makes me want to throw up. "Is there anything in her past that could help shed light on anything?"
At which point, we find out that as a child... Wait, it gets better. Sit with me for this. We find out that as a child, Denise has been molested. So then, what does Matt Mustard say to her, to the mom? Because I wrote it down.
Yeah, I did too.
And it's going to give you the biggest ick on the planet.
So he says... "Women that have been sexually assaulted often pretend to have it happen again so they can relive the thrill of it."
Relive the thrill of being sexually assaulted.
Yeah, I will give you all a moment to throw up. Because what the actual fuck? First of all, that should not ever be a thought that comes into your head, ever. Even if it is, it shouldn't be something you say out loud. Never mind. Say out loud to the mother of someone who was sexually assaulted.
That feels like something that Matt Mustard could have, like, turned to his detective partner and said behind the scenes. And, like, that's the only time we ever hear that information is when he, as a police officer, is being candidly interviewed in front of the camera. And he's like,
"But
we have
also,
this experience where, like, you know what I mean?
Like, can we fact check that? Like, is that even..."
But that's what I'm saying.
Because,
like,
I highly doubt it.
I'm going to deep dive into that Google search later. But my point is, like, that...
It's like...
You don't drop that bomb on a mother. You don't drop that bomb on any victims' families or victims themselves. Like, you don't say that shit.
It's also not, there's no way that's true. And it's like, what gave you the literal audacity to say that?
So to me, He could have worded it better because I think what he means is like the attention-seeking behavior of like the everyone look at me. I think that that's what he's going for. But like relive the thrill of being sexually assaulted. No, I'm so out on this man right now.
Yeah. And this is the point at which we realize the police think Denise staged her own kidnapping.
Yeah. And also, we've met Aaron's lawyers at this point.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Aaron's lawyer says is that nobody in fucking North America is going to believe this story. Because, like, why would they? Of course. Like, boy, no kidding, man. Like, this has just gotten real weird.
Yeah.
But then, like, now that we have proof of life and we know that Denise is alive, the lawyers are like, how much do lawyers know from police? Do police share any information with the lawyers? Do the lawyers themselves, like, if I'm the criminal defense attorney, do I have to go looking for the information, or can I like get some from the police? Because I know that
I do not know what that process looks like.
What's the freaking word I'm looking for? The prosecutor gets all of their information from the police. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. But like, sidebar, that's just my question. How much do criminal defense lawyers or like the victim's lawyers get?
I mean, they have to give it to them in discovery, but I don't know at what point that kicks in.
Like, yeah.
They're not actively going to trial. He hasn't been formally accused of anything. So I don't think the police have to tell his lawyers shit at this point.
Yeah, I'm just fucking curious. That's all.
Yeah. Now.
Do we?
We cut to 9:09 a.m. on March 15th. Wait.
March 25th.
Yeah, March 25th.
This is 2 days later.
This is a week before this happened. March 25th. We cut to camera footage from a residential street. And we see a woman casually walking toward a house carrying a duffel bag.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to...
What's good with the duffel bag?
Denise's dad, Mike. He has a message on his phone from Denise that says she is walking over to his house. Now, reminder, his house is in Huntington Beach, 400 miles away from Vallejo, where he currently is, trying to look for Denise.
So the kidnappers have just abandoned her?
Though, can you imagine getting that? Like, you just flew 400 miles away to find your missing daughter, and then you get a call from her, and she's like, I'm at your house. Like, obviously, you're relieved because she's alive, but you're 400 miles away, and you're like, fuck. Like, oh my God, I can't even imagine that. Yeah. I wrote down, I have so many questions. Like, what happened to the ransom? Aaron didn't.
But that's what I'm saying, is like, they never go back to the ransom. So these kidnappers just abandoned the ransom and they just simply leave her in the middle of the road outside of her dad's house? Because then Henry Lee, right? That's his name. He makes a comment like, the door-to-door service after you've been kidnapped. That gives me the ick.
Yes. Yeah.
But like,
also,
casually walking up and she's got a duffel bag. Like, what's good with the overnight bag?
Also, how did she get there? Why is she now in Huntington Beach, 400 miles away from where she went missing?
Why does she look like she just went to a sleepover?
Yeah.
And is coming home.
You guys, she's so casual. Like, when I say it's just suspiciously calm, everything about this, like, she's just casually strolling up with her duffel bag. She literally looks like she just stayed at her friend's house down the street and is coming back home. Like,
enter again, Detective Kenny Park.
Okay, but also, did you see in the video, there was a man behind her, like, walking in the same direction. Like,
I did notice there was a person, but I didn't pick up on, like,
Is he involved? Like, he's walking behind her, and I was like, who is this man?
Yeah, it's just, like, it's too calm, cool, and collected for me. Like, it's too casual. It's just weird.
Yeah, it was very suspiciously calm. And this is the point at which I'm like, literally, what the fuck? Like, did she actually stage this whole thing?
Yeah, I've fully committed myself. Now, like, the second I knew she was alive, I was like, oh, all right. What if Aaron's in on it? And then she's just casually walking up to the front door of her dad's home. And then the media goes bananas and starts talking about the movie Gone Girl.
Okay, Gone Girl, for those of you who don't know, because
I had never seen it.
Same, which is very off-brand for me that I haven't seen that movie.
But let's just talk about that for a quick second. Like, we've never seen this movie, so it's very plausible that a multitude of other people have also not seen this fucking movie. Starring Ben Affleck and I forgot her name. Help?
Oh God, I don't know that girl's name, but I know what she looks like. Wait,
she's blonde. She looks exactly like Denise.
Yeah, so the movie Gone Girl is about a woman who finds out her husband is cheating on her, so she fakes her own disappearance in an attempt to set him up for murder. Which I was like, okay, that's actually kind of a slay. Like, that's actually amazing.
No, oh my God. I was like, this is why Kelvin told me he would never watch a true crime with me again, because I got so mad. Like,
you got mad at Gone Girl?
No, I got mad at the premise that, like, the media is like, yeah. No, I got mad at the concept of Gone Girl is what it was, because it's like, why bother going through that much effort to frame your cheating husband for murder? Just fucking leave him. Do something better with that energy. Oh my God. Are you joking?
I don't know. I thought it was a slay. I mean, it's a movie. Obviously, if it happened in real life, I'd be like,
well, at this point, I'm convinced that Denise has done that. And I'm like,
okay, fair.
Can you please, like, so you Gone Girl yourself?
Okay.
Like, but that's obnoxious. Just dump his ass and leave. Just.
Yeah. So essentially.
Enter Detective Kenny fucking Park. He's doing his media interview again. And he goes on to say, basically, that none of the claims have been substantiated. Okay, but did you try? Did the Vallejo police
they're literally like, because we didn't do our job.
I have a list right here of at least 12 incidences where, like, the evidence is just never simply spoken about again. That aside, like, he basically just calls them liars. Yeah, and says that they've wasted valuable resources and that...
He says Aaron and Denise have wasted our time, basically. He essentially tells everyone that the Vallejo Police Department doesn't believe these people and have not properly investigated this because they think they're lying, which is fair because same, but you still have to investigate it. You know what I mean?
But like, why when she was dead, she was an innocent victim. And now she's alive. So suddenly that means she's not an innocent victim anymore. I get it. Cause I also immediately was like, yo, she's guilty of something sus right here. But also,
had they even talked to her at that
point? No,
I don't think they had even talked to
her. They wanted to
when they made that statement, which is bananas.
No, cause that's one of the other things is like, Aaron's lawyers text the police and are like, Aaron wants to talk to Denise. And the police are like, we want to talk to her too. Yeah, no shit. Everybody, I'm sure, wants to talk to her. But the point is.
Yeah. So without even talking to Denise, they make a media statement essentially saying this is all an elaborate hoax.
That's one of the things Kenny Park says is that, like, they had contact and then they no longer have contact. So, like, for a brief second, she was like, hi, I'm alive. And now is not speaking to the police anymore. And at which point Kenny is like, she probably did the whole getting a lawyer thing completely correctly for all intents and purposes.
But not even that. It's like, before I go in and tell the cops everything that just happened to me, I need, like, she probably wants to see her family and talk to her family and, like, her boyfriend. Like, I get it.
Like, the priorities are reasonable, probably.
Yeah.
And the police are just like, nope, you're a liar. You've wasted all of our resources and you can basically get fucked. I mean, they say that in appropriate professional media-friendly terms, but, like, I still want to know if the police ever substantiated their claims. Like,
yeah, no, they did not.
Did they even try?
So it cuts to Nancy Grace, which was a jump scare because Nancy Grace is always a jump scare. And then it jump cuts to Denise, who is also here with us about to, like, tell her story, presumably.
She's gonna get interviewed. She doesn't say anything, though. She just does a whole look at the camera.
No, she doesn't say anything. The episode ends with revealing that she's about to spill the tea. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because at this point, I'm like, all right, you're alive.
But
are you with Aaron? Like, did you Gone Girl yourself? Did you freaking, like, set up and, did you waste all of the resources off of, like, are you the criminal here? What's going on?
So I am shook. I am shook. That's just episode one. And that is just episode one.
Got a lot of thoughts. I can't wait to rewatch episode two.
I literally forget. I don't forget what happens, but I feel like I've forgotten a lot of the details. So yeah,
I can't wait.
We'll be rewatching episodes two and three and recapping them. Unless you all tell us that you don't care to hear our opinions, which is valid.
Yeah, you can be honest and tell us that you hated this because we're chaotic, but I thought it was fun.
If you did, and nobody actually wants to hear us, then we're not going to bother making a whole true crime podcast. So that would actually save us a lot of time. So if you did hate this episode...
If you did, in fact, hate this episode, leave it in the comments.
Please don't leave a review because that would reflect poorly on my Quit Your Job Sis podcast, but you can definitely slide into my DMs and let me know that you hated it. That would be fair. But also, if you loved it, let me know too, so that we can finish out the rest of this series.
That's true.
And if you have any thoughts on this bananas fucking documentary, please also let us know.
Yeah.
DM me at Lindsay M. Hansen on Instagram, or I don't know, do you want people to DM you?
Oh my God, yes, you can DM me about this. Find me at Katie Meigs.
Oh man, yeah. I'll link our socials in the show notes for you guys. But
yeah,
thanks for listening. Who knows, maybe this is the start of a whole true crime podcast.
Give us your thoughts on what to call it.
Yeah, we need names. We've got name ideas.
We've got a couple cooking in there, but
yeah,
always open to feedback. Always open to new ideas.
Also, let us know if there's other documentaries you want us to talk about, or cases, or whatever.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Thank you guys for listening. I don't even know when this episode is going to be dropped, to be completely honest with you.
That's
and
fair.
I don't know when the next one will be either, but
I might have a new Instagram handle by then.
Stay tuned. Thank you for listening.
Bye, friends.
Bye.